This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Drance, what's going on, man?
Hey, buddy. Not much.
Well, a lot. Ooh,
just processing.
A lot's going on.
Well,
in
just
some
processing.
Ways. Yeah.
A lot is going on. But at this point, it's just sober reflection.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've been a little surprised, Jamie, to be totally honest with you, with kind of the Chicken Little reaction to it.
All right.
You seem less surprised.
I'm not surprised at all. Hey, you want, like, we'll get into it with Dhaliwal, but they're reporting 5 year, $5 million per. He walked away from it.
Yeah. I haven't heard the $5 million per, but I had heard five.
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't have that confirmed with a second source yesterday morning when I came on and was confidently talking about money not being the issue, like right at the death before Tockett made his decision. But yeah, I mean, all the reporting subsequently, I think, has confirmed what I was telling our audience, right? Which was that money, this is not a negotiation, and this is not about money. This is, at this point, just the ball in Tockett's court. And Tockett decided, obviously, to go his own way. And sorry, I had the temptation to sing it after I said it. But I think for me, Jamie, it just feels like this is kind of the natural culmination of a lot of what we've been talking about on this program across the last 4 or 5 years. It's just a window into seeing it more clearly for fans. And so all of a sudden it kind of becomes a little less deniable.
I was texting with Jason Brough this morning and I described it as a lot of chickens coming home to roost at once, right? Like a lot of investments or bets that were made in the past coming up in a bad way, or investments that weren't made and now you're starting to see the negative effects, right? Like just a culmination of cans that were kicked down the road, and now you're like, you've gone down the road and you're like, dang, there's all these cans down here. What do we do about this? You know what I mean? It's like we've kicked so many cans down the road, and it's just starting to, it feels like the weight of that catching up. And of course, then there's also the dynamic of last season where it felt like, hey, we escaped, right? We pulled it off. We kicked the cans down the road and it worked out and we're getting past it and here we go. And then it's hitting like a freight train right now, right? Where it's like, uh-oh, this could be going in a very different direction. Now, I think you're right to point out, and I read your piece at The Athletic yesterday, like hockey is super unpredictable on a game-to-game basis. The NHL is extremely unpredictable, right? You go back to the start of last season, nobody saw a 109-point season coming. You go back to the start of this year, nobody saw this year coming, right? Now, that doesn't mean we're going to wildly vacillate again back to extreme positivity next year.
We might,
but it is like it all goes to say that sometimes it looks like, oh, the writing's on the wall. This is only pointing in one direction. And then something else happens, something totally unexpected happens. So, like, I think that is an important thing to keep in mind. But I also understand if you're just kind of trying to take a step back and look at the big picture here, why there has been such an extreme negative reaction.
I think I'm just annoyed because I've been repeatedly talking about not a crashing downward, but a dripping slowly downward line across the last 4 years. And, you know, we get to this moment and it feels like the sense is that, oh man, the bottom's really fallen out here. And I don't know that it necessarily has any more than sort of, we're still on that downward trajectory. We're still on that downward trajectory with the cliff not being Tockett's decision, but being Hughes's decision a year from now.
Yeah. All right. It is Wednesday, which means later on in the show, we're going to chat with Jason Buchla, who's live at the U18s down in Texas. A 1:30 for Books today, just because it works out for his schedule covering the games down there. But right now, we're good to go. Yeah. All right. We will go to the crossover, of course, with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. You can watch them Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV on Donnie and Dolly. And they join us every Wednesday for the crossover. Rick, Don, what's going on, fellas?
Well, not much.
Zero.
You guys, like, you guys got to, you got to figure out the temperature situation in your studio, guys. You guys look like you're going out into a blizzard after jackets. This.
It's minus 40 in here.
The air conditioning situation here is very interesting. Let me just say this. But Rick claims that he lived up north for a long
time. I did.
Yeah.
It gets to be plus 8, and he's complaining. I don't understand it.
I spent 4 years in northern British Columbia. So did Don.
Yes.
In the mid-90s.
Five for me.
Five for you. I've walked in minus 50 degrees weather. I lived a block of
it. Naked.
Back in the days when radio guys had to pay their dues to get on the air. You know, we paid our dues up north. Beautiful uh-huh. British Columbia, northern BC. I got all my good friends up there.
And now look at you, wearing a parka in the studio.
Yeah. It's minus 40 in here. It's ridiculous.
All right. I mean, look, there's only one place to start. Rick Tocchet is out. Big news from yesterday. We heard some really interesting commentary from Jim Rutherford. I know you guys have always been on have been all over the story today on your show as well. What's your reaction? What does this mean for the Canucks fans, the organization going forward?
Well, first of all, I want to say the Canucks did step up big time and made an absolutely great offer, to Rick Tocchet. I don't think negotiations were really in a good spot in the first week after the regular season, guys. But I do believe in the last 4 or 5 days they picked up. And I just want to say the Canucks absolutely would have made Rick Tocchet one of the highest paid coaches in the National Hockey League. It would have been 5 years. Donnie thinks it was 5 times 5, which I think is not out of the realm.
You
said that. Anyways, 5 times 5 is what is the feeling out there? I definitely know it was 5 years. But I got to ask you guys this. Did the offer come a couple of months? I got to ask you. Stop cackling, Thomas.
I'm laughing because that's exactly – I just framed it exactly the same way, so our intel is, like, exact, which is just funny.
5 times 5? 5 times 5?
No, I said I wasn't hearing the money. I didn't know if it was 5 million, but I had heard that it was 5 years. So way that you just framed it there was exactly what I was hearing. That's why I was cackling to myself.
Yeah, but here's the question. Was the offer a couple of months late? Why was the offer the one that was really good take so long in the 11th hour? If the offer was 2 or 3 months ago to Tocchet, would Tocchet have accepted?
Maybe a year late.
Well, I was going to say, last summer.
Yeah, it's a year late.
After
right?
the Adams Award.
So why did they wait till the very, very, very end? And the other one, I'm going to tell you guys right now, Tocchet just felt it was time for a change. He was not having fun. This season wore him down. The drama, the chaos, the dysfunction, the Miller leave of absence, the Miller PD feud, Pettersson feud, his number one center's got 45 points. It was time to try something new. He's got brothers in Toronto, wants to be closer to the family. There is an understanding that the Canucks will not stand in his way to talk to other teams. But I just think, boy, oh boy, to say no to that term and money, you have got to really be in a bad situation and say no to that.
Who leaves an NHL coaching job? Just leaves.
Nobody.
Never.
Maurice. Maurice did. He stepped back.
Yeah.
Which is
Jamie, quit ruining my take
so not
here.
Never.
Okay.
But I agree. Look, it has happened, but I agree. And
Marcus Naslund left an NHL job.
Well, how about this? How about this, though? Who, like, not just who steps away from an NHL head coaching job, who walks away from a 5-year deal worth probably over $20 million. Like, that's the difference. It's one thing if you're like, hey, I've got a few months left of my deal. I'm probably not coming back. I'm probably going to step away anyways at the end of this year. That's one thing. There's a massive amount of term and money on the table for you, and you walk away from an NHL head coaching job. Like, you know, on the one way, you can look at the offer as a positive thing, right? Hey, they didn't cheap out. They didn't lose them over money. But it also speaks to, well, there must have been a lot else going on here for Rick Tocchet to walk away from that kind of offer.
Yeah, and I think a lot of, well, we believe there's another offer to come for Rick Tocchet if it hasn't come already. Mm. But if he felt the Canucks were close, if he felt the future was promising, if he felt Quinn Hughes wasn't leaving, if he believed in Elias Pettersson, if there was a practice facility, maybe he sees a lot. There's a lot that's wrong here. And I think this departure speaks to that. And I feel bad for the fans. This was arguably the worst season in Canucks history. Yeah. Like honestly, yeah. Like there's been some bad seasons, some disappointing seasons. But when you talk about high expectations, not coming close to living up to those expectations, I know you think it was a great season, Rick, because they got 90 points, but I'm sorry, it wasn't. Rick mentioned it, the Pettersson-Miller feud, the Miller leave of absence, the trading of Miller, Pettersson not being able to produce, him not moving his feet and not practicing well, you know, not trading Besser or Suter but before the deadline and getting something for them. No progress on a practice facility. There's so much that went wrong in such a short period of time. When you look back to last year, they weren't even in the series against Edmonton at this time. This is less than a year. Wins his Adams Award less than a year ago. And it's arguably the worst season in Canucks history. And it follows a season with a whole lot of promise that nobody really expected either. It's just... I just feel really bad for fans who've suffered for a long, long time.
One more thing, guys. Pettersson is not a talk-type guy, all right? He signed up for 7 more years. Do you think if you ask Rick Tocchet, can you win, Rick, with Pettersson as your number one setter for the next 7 years? What would Rick Tocchet say if he was being honest? He is saddled with a number one center for 7 more years who just had 45 points, and he's got to beg him to move his feet. He's got to beg him to play better in practice, harder, and he's got to beg him to train in the summer better. The fact that Tocchet was going to go to into Sweden in the summer to check on Pettersson, do you think Colorado checks in on Nathan MacKinnon in the summer? Do you think Pittsburgh checks in on Sidney Crosby in the summer? What other NHL superstar do you know that gets checked to make sure that they're training the proper way? How bad is that? Don't think all these things played in a Tocchet's decision? They probably did.
Well, you know another thing, guys. We ran a clip today, and Thomas, you might remember this, but a little over a week and a half ago when Rick Tocchet had his end-of-season media session, and it was a little bit rushed. It was a little ahead of the curve. He had to leave for somewhere. And so he has this end of season media session. And he talked about having lunch with Quinn Hughes. Do you remember this, Thomas?
Yep.
He talked about having lunch with Quinn Hughes and how they talked about things. And I just can't help but wonder what happened in that meeting. And it was clear with his answer about Quinn Hughes and about that lunch that they talked about the future of the team and that how there was runway for Quinn Hughes to make his decision with 2 years left, meaning that there's clearly something wrong going on here and things better improve or I'm out of here, and how he had to sit back and analyze what's happening with the Canucks. I'm going to guess that he got the idea that Quinn Hughes right now is leaning towards getting out of Dodge, being Vancouver, at the end of this. That clip stuck with me. We ran it today, and I think that there was a little something to it. But there's just so much going on, and obviously Rick Tocchet is going somewhere else where he feels that the future might be better, and it would be somewhat of a slap in the face if that. If that team was the Philadelphia Flyers, who they've been in disarray. If he feels that's better than the Vancouver Canucks, I know Jim Rutherford talked about him wanting to be, in the East, closer to some of his family members. I get that, but that would still be a slap in the face.
Yeah,
I think the other factor here that we need to consider is just the totality of Rick Tocchet's career. I mean, this is a guy who's all in. When he's working for a team, he's extremely competitive and he's going to do absolutely everything he can to get his team over the line or to where they want to go. I think we saw that certainly internally. There's a lot of conversation about Tocchet's work rate, right? Just how dialed he is during the season. And for someone who works like that and has ambition, right? I think when you consider like breaking into the business, taking over for Barry Melrose 16 games into his tenure, which was a disaster, spending, a year and a half just like rebuilding Steven Stamkos's confidence in an organization that's wildly underfunded. This is the pre-Jeff Vinnick Tampa Bay Lightning. Vinnick buys the team, and right before the stability kicks in, he's let go, right? And then his next opportunity comes with the laundromat Arizona Coyotes at the tail end of their run where they were no longer really a serious franchise. You know, he's got the GM leaving the organization right before they enter the playoffs and the bubble, all of that rigmarole that he had to work through there. And then he comes here, he gets to work with people he trusts, you know, apparently has stability, authors this defensive turnaround, has the team, you know, looking like a year over year fringe contender and playoff team. And then he endures all of what this season was. You know, at some point, if you're proud and you want to work and you believe in your skill set, like, don't you want to give yourself a chance to win and to work without the BS? I mean, that experience here, I think when we really think through what this means for Tocchet and what sort of availing himself of the opportunity to see what's out there means this summer, I mean, I think it's pretty understandable. And honestly, I think you got to respect it.
I don't think that people realize you made some good points there. I don't think people realize how tough the Miller-Pedersen feud was on Tocchet. It was two guys that took the brunt of the Pedersen-Miller feud, and it was Tocchet and it was Quinn Hughes. Quinn Hughes tried a lot of things to fix that. Rick Tocchet did, and I know management. That wore him down. That dysfunction of Miller-Pedersen feud wore Tocchet. He spent too much time on those two guys. And then when Miller left, a guy he didn't want to trade, who's a Rick Tocchet type player? JT Miller. You know why? Hard skill. Do you see any hard skill in the Canucks lineup in the top six after Miller left? No. Right? The guy without the hard skill was kept. But that wore him down, Thomas. Like, people don't understand how tough that situation was for a head coach to deal with in a Canadian market.
Yeah, and you know,
I don't think it wore him down just this season.
No,
like, I think that was a factor even when
Thomas,
they were winning.
I was going to say that. Yeah, Rick Tocchet leaves, and nobody looks at Rick Tocchet as a quitter, right? Nobody looks. Same thing can be said of Trevor Linden. And both those people, so respected in the world of hockey. I know Trevor's moved on to other business ventures. But they both leave this organization after a relatively short period of time. And this is going back with Trevor Linden. It's just something stinks, and I think it's pretty obvious that it's a little bit higher than management level. Something's going on.
Yep.
Something's going on. I mean, for those two respected players to just leave like that, you know, and some people, we've had it in our inbox today, tarnishing their image or someone. I don't think they care. They just want to get out.
Well, and I think...
Go ahead, Jamie.
Well, I think we're going to talk about, you know, okay, the next coach, he has to be able to get through to Pedersen. You know, Quinn Hughes has to respect him, all this. What do they need in the next coach? And that's all true, and we'll talk about that, and it'll be really interesting to see who they hire. But job number one is just... improve the reputation of this franchise from the ground up, from the top to the bottom, right? Like, improve the sense of stability, everything, the culture, whatever you want to call it, whatever big picture word you want to use. It's difficult to see Rick Tocchet walk away from this and not come to the conclusion that you've got a credibility issue, right? You are seen as a dysfunctional organization where it's going to be difficult to win.
Yep.
And I see people kicking around like, well, hey, maybe if John Cooper shakes loose from Tampa, what are you going to have to do to convince John Cooper to come here, right? If Rick Tocchet's walking away from this job, you've got the Quinn Hughes decision that he has to make on the near horizon. I don't know how you start to do it. I don't know how you turn around this kind of sense of, as you said, Trevor Linden leaves, and now Rick Tocchet leaves, and there's been this exodus, and it feels like there's always something going wrong. I don't know how you start to change that perception, but beyond, hey, we got to nail the coaching hire, beyond we need a really good second-line center this season – those are big deals, don't get me wrong, but they pale in comparison to just completely changing what fans and everyone else around the league thinks of this team and thinks of how they operate. Like, that's the number one task in front of them now, and it's a big, big deal.
Well, if you want to change the perception, you have to do something that you haven't done before, because nothing else has really worked. And I'm not talking about making the playoffs. I'm talking about winning the Stanley Cup. And I'm with Thomas, and him and I have been on the same of the same opinion for a while now. Hire Manny Malhotra and rebuild. I'm people are, you know, people, the kid in Medicine Hat is available in 2026. If you got a chance, McKenna, if you got a chance to get yourself a first overall, second overall, do something you haven't done before, have a focus. And that's the way you'll get people to believe in this organization again. Get this market, which knows a hell of a lot about hockey and knows that rebuilding through the draft and through young players is a pretty good idea. Look at Montreal. That's how you'll restore credibility in this organization, in the minds of a lot of the public. Focus on something. Focus on a rebuild. Do something you haven't done before. Mm-hmm. Everybody's so afraid of a rebuild. You go on and on, Rick. Oh, it's going to take 10 years. Look at the last 10 years. It's been horrible.
Horrible. Horrible. That
with,
is true.
With one blip. Hey,
which was always the argument, by the way.
Yeah.
You're like uncertainty is scary, but certain mediocrity is worse.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's fine. Okay, oh, Thomas, I'm not getting in this with you on the
just
rebuild.
Capitulate, and we can move on.
Jamie.
We just had two hours of it, by the way.
Yeah. Thomas, so you know. I'm not getting into it with you on the rebuild. Jamie, you talked about perception.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So let's talk about perception of the organization. Do you think any top July 1st free agents have got Vancouver on their list?
Nope.
Do you think players and agents aren't watching the mess that has been this year? People in this city keep talking about Bennett and Marner. I'd love to give those guys truth serum and ask them if Vancouver's on their list. I would love that. And here's another one for you.
Truth serum. Well, or don't give them truth serum.
Okay.
Just ask
anyways,
them.
Thomas, I'm ignoring you right now, Thomas. I'm talking to Jamie. The other one is, I thought the drama was supposed to end after the season, right? We got this Tom Olander thing. They're picking a fight with their number one draft pick. The drama's not ending. This practice facility, you know, it keeps being brought up. The season's over. And now Rick Tocchet's left. The drama and the it's not ending. The chaos and the dysfunction. I thought it would end after the regular season finale. But we are and the rest of the league is noticing the tire fires in Vancouver. They really, really, really are.
Well, I'll go back. Forget the drama ending after this season. I mean, I'll go way back here. When Jim Benning was let go, right? And you think of back, I mean, the whole Jim Benning tenure, but even especially the last year or so with the North Division season and COVID and, you know, Travis Green out there answering for the organization all the time. It was messy. It was dramatic. All of that. Benning's let go. Jim Rutherford comes in. And I think we were saying it at the time, like job number one is stop being dramatic. Stop being the number one soap opera in the NHL. And you could look at it and say, hey, this is an extremely the most experienced available executive on the market, three-time Stanley Cup winner. If there's anyone who can kind of restore that sense of credibility to the organization, it should be Jim Rutherford. And that really was the task in front of him in large part, in addition to winning, obviously. And I have a lot of respect for Jim Rutherford. I love, from our perspective, the way he does his press conferences, but has the drama gotten any less in the last, you know, 3.5 years that he's been here? It hasn't. We're still at this fever pitch of almost weekly drama around the Vancouver Canucks, and you thought it was going to be
and what's
his
wrong
job
with
to fix
that?
It. I mean, listen, don't get me wrong. It can be a lot of fun.
Fighting the hand that feeds here,
it can
Jamie.
Be a lot of fun sometimes. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
Stop it, Jamie.
Hey, listen, I love the Jim Rutherford weekly comedy routine, okay? I'm not going to complain about that. But it's not just, oh, this whole year's been dramatic. It's like we're talking about 5-6 years of constant drama, basically, around this team.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thank God, because maybe we might all be out of work.
And here's to that.
I also like the P.T. Barnum streak. There's like an old school like hockey showman element to some of those Jim Rutherford press conferences that I actually appreciate. It's just that we react so differently to them when the market feels the way it did yesterday.
Yes.
Versus the way we react to them after the 2023-2024 season. I think that says more about, you know, sort of us, as it were, than it does about Rutherford. Like, I don't think this is a departure for Rutherford. It's just that the Vancouver market, you know, the lights are a little bit brighter, obviously, than they are in Pittsburgh and Carolina. But I don't think that's holding them back necessarily. I certainly don't think that's the issue. What I do think we're going to bump into here, right, is this offseason where, you know, to bring it back to Rick's favorite point about the rebuild, I actually think that this is one of those moments where, you know, the way that this organization has conducted business with the short-term priorities always front of mind actually aligns with what they should do this summer, right? I think about, you know, the idea of Hughes's quality, and you want to win some playoff games a year from now and do your best to convince him to stay. He's a player of the caliber that is actually worth, you know, putting chips into the center of the table to bring about that the possibility of that outcome. And by the way, he's also a player of such transcendent quality that even if you fail, then this is your last chance with the best defenseman in franchise history. You know, like, go for it. Like, this is a go for it summer for me. But on the other hand, I do have this belief generally that if it's about the crest on the front of the jersey and not the names on the back, there's an element to which, like, what's the best pitch to Quinn Hughes? We've done everything possible to make you happy, or we're going to do it our way because our way works and we want you to be front and center and part of that. Like, at some point, there is sort of this hard core of self-respect and vision that I think is more powerful ultimately in player recruitment, in relationship building, in partnership building, than sort of this sense of being reactive that I feel like we've always had across the last decade and a half with the Canucks.
Oh, absolutely.
I thought you were still ignoring Grant.
Well, I thought you were going to ask a question. Thomas, you went on for 9 minutes, and I thought at the end you'd ask a question. Anyways.
I thought it was a good take. I didn't know you guys didn't want to build on a conversation with me. Well, My bad.
But
isn't
it amazing? And Donnie brings this up all the time, right? You know, 50-plus years of Canucks hockey, they finally get a Norris Trophy winner. They finally get the franchise defenseman. They finally get just an absolute stud D, and he's going to leave and walk in 2 years, right? It's almost like Canuck fans say all the time, why can't we have good things? Mm-hmm. And why can't good things stay in Vancouver? If this guy walks in 2 years, what does that say? Like, what does that say? We finally got, the Canucks fans finally got a Norris Trophy winner, and it looks like he's on the verge of walking. And just, it never ends.
Let me add, Thomas, here's something. I just wrote down my notes after your nine-minute speech there. So are you not a rebuild guy now? Is that what I'm getting from what you did?
Flip-flop.
What you said? Like, it's an all-in summer?
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting moment where all of a sudden it's like the emperor has no clothes and everyone's like, oh boy, all the short-term thinking the organization's been doing, it really feels like it's not going to work out here. And yet this is actually the moment where I think it's most justified for this club to conduct business the way they have across the last 15 years. And it's just like a funny irony that, like, the moment the market gets completely sick of it, I actually think it's the most defensible course of action going forward.
To your point, Rick, about, well, are they going to decide to do a rebuild or not in that debate? Like, on Quinn Hughes, if he leaves, the decision's out of your hands, right? Like, guess what? You're rebuilding. Yeah. There's no, we're not rebuilding if Quinn Hughes walks. Whatever you want to call it, however you want to think about it, if he leaves, you're rebuilding. The end.
Did you gentlemen get any text into your inbox? Who sponsors your inbox?
Dunbar Lumber, Ken Priestley.
Okay. I thought it was Delaney's.
Hey,
okay,
you know what? Hey,
his team's beat ours and mine.
Hold on. You can say Delaney's now because we have an ongoing feature for the playoffs brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire. Oh. One to watch every day here on the show.
There you go, in Langley and Aldergrove.
That's exactly right. Dottie.
Now I've forgotten what I was going to ask you guys. All I know is, have you received any submissions in your inbox, which we did today, about people wanting to trade Quinn Hughes now rather than later?
Yes.
When you can get a whole lot for him, maybe 2 years in New Jersey versus one or a couple of weeks. We had a lot of that today, and a lot of people making some pretty strong arguments for that.
We have had those today, but to be honest, I don't know what this says about our listenership. We've been having those for like a couple months now, so I don't know that it's maybe it accelerated a little bit with the Rick Tocchet news, but we've been getting those texts.
And the take on that from our show generally, Donnie, has been no matter what, the way that you maximize the value is doing that Mikko Rantanen style deal where you trade a guy when he's extension eligible with the 8-year extension as part of the contract, juicing the return, which maximizes the value of a star player that you're trading away, right? So no matter what, your interests are still to enjoy this season with Quinn Hughes and figure it out on the other side, which is partly why, too, I think the interests align for this to be a justified all-in summer.
All right, fellas, this was...
I just want to see him smile.
Well, we might be waiting a long time for that.
I want to see Quinn Hughes smile. When's the last time we saw it?
Yeah, exactly.
Did he? I don't know. Did he
Thomas,
smile?
Why does the...
No.
Did he? I was going to say, did he smile when he won the Norris?
Thomas, why... Huh?
Did he smile when he won the Norris? We'd have to go back and check. Did he? There you go.
The Norris tie.
There we go.
Yeah, he did. He did. He doesn't smile.
Sorry, what do you want to say?
Jimmy,
yeah, exactly. Thomas, why does the Emperor have no clothes on? Why does the Emperor have no clothes on?
Is that a riddle?
Because
a riddle?
He's wearing
no, I'm asking.
A robe.
He said the Emperor's got no clothes on. Huh? Yeah.
Do you want a 9-minute soliloquy? Do you not know the reference?
It's an old fable.
But why is the Emperor wearing no clothes?
Because he was told by a charlatan that he was wearing a fancy gown. And no one would tell him the truth until he reached the part of town where no one is under the influence of the palace, Rick.
Okay. Hey, it's a valid question. It's a valid. You brought it up. It's a valid question.
All right. Well, on that note, I can't think of a better way to end the show. We will do this again next week, fellas. Thank you. That is Rick Dollywall and Don Taylor.
Adios.
Bye, guys. You can watch
you
them
cheers.
Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. I have no idea what Rick was going for there. Absolutely no idea.
I think he was disturbed by the mental image of a naked emperor.
Is it possible that Rick has never heard the parable of the emperor with no clothes on? Is it a possibility that you introduced him to it today?
I'm legitimately going to send him like an illustrated version of it for his enjoyment tonight. I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great story. Great fable.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. All right.
One of my favorite fables. One of my favorite.
So
fables.
Good. All right. We will take a break.
We'll draft fables with Dimitri on Friday, by the way.
Sour grapes. That's a good one. Love that one. Anyways.
Excellent.
All right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll take a break. Drance had a piece up at The Athletic with Harmon Dial today looking at potential coaching candidates for the Vancouver Canucks. We can get into that. We can take your text next on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. All right. Obviously, we continue to dive into the news that Rick Tocchet won't be the Canucks head coach next year and what that means going forward as we start to turn our attention to the vacancy now for the Canucks. And I mean, they already had an exceptionally busy to-do list over the summer. New number one item right now, which is hire a new head coach. We'll see what the timeline is. We got a couple of pieces of information from Jim Rutherford yesterday on that. One, Mike Sullivan's not coming here. Two, Manny Malhotra will be on the short list. Hey, Peter Laviolette's an interesting name, but also there's a lot of guys coaching right now who didn't have NHL head coaching experience when they got their job, and they're doing a really good job. So certainly leaving the door open for a less experienced candidate as well. So lots to chew on there, and you and Harmon have the piece up at The Athletic. And before we kind of dive into some of the names you guys chose to highlight. I'll start it this way by posing this question to you, Drance. I know you love to think about things in betting line terms. Do you think it would be fair to have Manny Malhotra as the betting favorite right now? Not against the field, so not like a minus number, but just best odds of the field to be the Canucks' next head coach.
I don't.
Okay.
Or at the very least, I think I can see the argument for putting him at the top of the list, but it's like how the Carolina Hurricanes are currently favored to win the Stanley Cup.
Sure.
Because they're already through round one.
Sure. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's
he was named on the short list.
He'll be strongly considered.
Yeah. He's the only guy who we know is on the short list.
He's through round one. So, you know, I think it's okay to price him as the favorite, but he definitely wouldn't be minus money. And look, I think a lot of Manny Malhotra, I think the work that he's done this season in Abbotsford kind of speaks for itself. The fact that he's done it as a first-year head coach at the professional level. I mean, this is his first go-around as a head coach. Honestly, at like any level that's not, you know, like coaching his sons, right? I mean, he's obviously got decades of experience as a player. And of course, he was not just a player. He was a player coach, as anyone who was around his teams will tell you. He's obviously been an enormously successful assistant as an eye in the sky with the Canucks, you know, on the Maple Leafs bench, then going up to the sky again, and now as an AHL head coach. I mean, this is a guy who's going to be a top NHL head coaching candidate soon. Given the stakes of this season, do you worry about a guy taking over the reins in just his second season as a head coach?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and not a second season as a AHL head coach, like a second season as a head coach.
Yep.
Are you ready for managing this group of personalities given the work that we know is required from a maturity perspective? Is he the guy? And like, realistically, I think the question you have to ask is he the guy that can get Patterson back on track? Right? I mean, realistically, that's the number one question that I think you need to be viewing these candidates through, right? And I don't know, but, you know, that's the question. That's the sort of rubric. I just worry that it's a little bit too much too soon. Although, again, I think the success that he's had in the American League speaks for itself. And I think if you were to make that hire and then tell me this guy's on an exponential growth curve.
Yeah.
Like his development is accelerated because he's the guy. I don't know that I'd sniff at that. Like I'd be like, okay, that's a risk, but I wouldn't criticize the organization for making that bet. If you think you have the right guy, you think you have the right guy. And so that would be sort of how I'd caption the Malhotra candidacy. It feels a little too soon. But if this organization goes through the process and concludes that we're comfortable with that because he's that good, I'd say, yeah, there's a lot of evidence for that. And his accomplishments across 25 years in hockey kind of speak for itself and all point in that direction.
Yeah, it is an interesting one because it feels like you could take the cynical view, right? And hey, familiar name and he's on hand and he's not going to cost that much, right? So, hey, well, let's just take the path of least resistance, but we can still sell it to people and we'll promote him. That's the cynical view. But I think, and maybe some of those would be factors, but I do think there's an underlying level of depth to his candidacy. Like we shouldn't just write it off for the cynical viewpoint that I just laid out. There's real reasons that you could sell that and be excited about Manny Malhotra taking over. I also like,
I'd add this, Jamie,
yeah.
If you do hire Malhotra, I think you know, one thing that would be pretty important would be to assemble like an all-star team of
yes.
assistant coaches, at least one of whom has had coaching experience. I mean, You can hire the quote-unquote affordable or entry-level NHL head coach and not necessarily have it be like a budget-conscious decision based on how you fill out the staff. So I think, you know, if Malhotra is the guy, if they end up getting there, you know, I think it would probably behoove the organization, given the conversation about budget and finances that has surrounded this team, especially in the wake of the talk at departure, not to mention the Tom Volander standoff. You know, I think it would behoove them to sort of create a support staff, a robust support staff to, you know, buttress or protect or effectively support Manny Malhotra.
I also think, and we've talked about from a roster construction standpoint, right? And look, it doesn't seem like they're going to go this route, but okay, you're trying to do everything you can to convince Quinn Hughes to stay, but you also want to be mindful of the fact that he might leave. So does that influence, hey, maybe you're more likely to keep your young players and maybe trade some of the roster guys that you don't think are going to be here long term? Again, I know you said yesterday that's probably not the direction it's going, but conceptually it makes sense. And I wonder with Malhotra, if you think you're not, like, if you think he has enough credibility and respect from Quinn Hughes, or at least enough of a chance to earn that credibility and respect from Quinn Hughes, that you're not essentially punting on that decision, but he's also a young head coach who could theoretically grow with you if you're in a different phase if Quinn Hughes leaves. You know what I mean? Like, I do wonder if there's an element of being able to thread the needle there a little bit with Manny Malhotra, where it's like transitional. You think he can do the job right now, but you're also mindful and maybe setting yourself up for the next phase of things if it comes to that.
My view of it anyway is it's impossible in any role in the NHL. I'm talking fourth line player. I'm talking assistant equipment manager. I'm talking about medical trainer. I'm talking about ticket sales rep at Rogers Arena, NHL head coach for sure. You do not know what you do not know until you've been through a full cycle.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a rookie league. Sometimes rookies make phenomenal contributions, but there needs to be an awful lot of thought put into supporting them and what their role is and making it predictable and bite-sized and putting them in an opportunity to succeed. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff that needs to go into it. I think given the stakes of this campaign for the Canucks, you know, and this would be my, like, I think Malhotra can be an NHL head coach. I hope he is not an NHL head coach now for him.
Right.
I think this would be a really difficult situation to walk into, just sort of given his trajectory and where the club is at this moment in time, which is not to say that I'll be critical if he is the hire. It's just to say that, you know, another year in the AHL, you know, bring in an experienced hand this season, I think makes a lot more sense for me than, you know, sort of rushing Malhotra and putting him in a position where I just don't think he'll necessarily have like his best chance to reach his potential, which I think is immense.
Yeah. Now, you made the point as well, and not controversial, right, that beyond the Quinn Hughes thing, getting Elias Pettersson back to form is going to be the number one task for whoever they hire as the head coach. And that's a fascinating thing to think about, because, you know, I think about the NFL, right? And you got a young quarterback you're trying to develop. What do? Well, you go get the offensive coordinator for the team that just had a great passing season, right? And hey, he can install these concepts. He knows how to design a passing game. Boom, we're going to have him help our quarterback get to the next level. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't work so well. I think a lot of people will hear this and say, okay, hey, yeah, go get an offensively oriented head coach, right? Someone who really knows how to juice offense and put guys into positions to succeed. And that might be part of it with Elias Pettersson. But we also just heard Jim Rutherford talk at length about how Pettersson needs to become more of a complete player, right? And yeah, hey, he can get his points, but he needs to do all these other things as well. So I do wonder, like, okay, we can sit here and say this coach needs to be able to work with Elias Pettersson and get the most out of him. What does that actually translate to in terms of the attributes you're looking for in a head coach? You know what I mean? Because I don't think it's as simple as, well, get a guy who's run a really good power play before. That could be part of the solution. That's a nice thing to have on your resume. But I don't think it will necessarily immediately translate to greater production from Elias Pettersson. I think it's a much deeper problem, or a much more complex problem, that they need to try to solve and that the head coach will need to try to solve.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. Like, I think the guy that I hope to hear connected to this job, right? If I were to put my finger on the scale and editorialize a bit, and I just do not understand why Todd Nelson isn't at the absolute front of the line here. You know, at the end of the day, we've seen how much success American League bench bosses have had when promoted. Jared Bednar, right, obviously stands out. Mike Sullivan is an example of this.
John Cooper.
John Cooper is an example of this. Yeah. I mean, go down the list. Like, all of these guys who come in and are immediately great, you know, and have long tails of sort of an excellent record, tend to be American League coaches. Carberry, right? I think like that's the way to go because, in my view anyway, the best sort of profile from both a affordability perspective and a longevity perspective and just a recent track record of success perspective, like what's the profile of the perfect head coach? Go find the best American League one.
Mm-hmm.
Go to find the best American League coach. And look, you can make an argument sort of using this for a guy like Jeremy Colleton too, right? You know, Mike Vellucci, the Pittsburgh Penguins assistant and, you know, former Jim Rutherford lieutenant in a front office capacity. He had a 2-year run in the American League with Wilkes-Barre and the Charlotte Checkers that was through the roof. He's an excellent American League bench boss. So, I mean, those, you can find arguments for other guys. But Todd Nelson, who spent a super successful 4-year stint. So these years that I'm about to discuss are interrupted by a stint that he spent on Cooper's staff with the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, during their kind of heyday. He has won 3 of the last 4 Calder Cups in full American League seasons that he ran. That's brutally difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
3 championships in 4 possible out of 4 chances in hockey?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why this guy doesn't seem to be at the absolute front of the line time in, time out. And I'll ask around and sort of flesh it out over the course of the next month. But if you're looking for like a merit-based process, if you stripped out names and just looked at track records and performance and did it purely merit-based, I mean, this is the guy of every guy around the league that it makes no sense that he's never got an opportunity to like enter a training camp with the team and even coach a single NHL season. Like the reason that hasn't happened better be extraordinarily compelling because the record speaks for itself. This guy, all he does is win. Sounds good.
Yeah, that's interesting. Guy who wins everywhere he goes, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, like an assistant with a Dallas Stars team recently that's won a ton of games in the regular seasons, right? Like, so even that, it's not like he's light on NHL experience. He has very recent assistant coach experience with
I said Lightning, right?
Oh, maybe, yeah. But wrong. It was with the Dallas Stars anyways, yeah. So with a high performing NHL team recently.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, connections to guys like Rick Bonus, right? Was a mainstay on that staff. Yeah, I mean, look, this guy, all he does is win. I don't know. That sounds good to me.
Yeah. I do wonder if there's one of those things there where like you go from relatively young, you know, fresh on the radar coaching prospect, and then for whatever reason, you don't get hired in a couple of cycles. And then it's just like, oh, you're almost old hat as a name. And then like the hype cycle passes you by and there's no like merit to it. It's just teams start looking in different directions and looking for that next list of like interesting young candidates and the shot doesn't come. Right. And again, like that's a reason to look into him, not a reason to avoid him, because sometimes it's just random like that where things don't break your way. Anyone else you want to highlight quickly on your list of potential candidates to be the Canucks' next head coach?
I mean, just Vellucci.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy who's worked in so many different capacities, all of them in Rutherford connected organizations. So a close relationship there. He obviously brought him to Pittsburgh sort of toward the waning days of his Penguins general manager tenure. I think that one, you know, stands out as being especially interesting, especially because, you know, I think you could view him as a guy who, you know, might be like a bridge to Malhotra.
Right.
Give you a steady hand for a couple of years, you know, and he's had his work in the American League was really highly regarded. And, you know, he's been on Sullivan's staff. So Sullivan doesn't want to come west. This is a guy who will have been influenced by Sullivan's approach and will have worked with Rutherford and Alvin in the past. And then the other one would be Mike Yeo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know Mike Yeo went east for family reasons himself last summer. I do think there was a, you know, contractual negotiated part of that too. Like, I don't think it was as simple as a family decision, but nonetheless, one thing about Yeo, and I thought it was interesting that Rutherford talked about how the day-to-day work of the coach is actually not the interaction with that is not my job. That's actually Patrick Alvin's portfolio, and Mike Yeo and Patrick Alvin, especially given Alvin's, you know, involvement first in pro scouting and then a little bit of a hand in player development, the way that he worked with the Penguins, how long Yo was part of that organization at the American League level and, you know, eventually at the NHL level. And so there's a long-standing relationship between those two, obviously including their time in Vancouver and Alvin's role bringing that about originally on Boudreau's staff. So I can't escape that name as a fascinating one, especially as I unpack Rutherford's commentary about Alvin's role in managing the head coach day-to-day.
Yeah, and Vellucci, I should point out, Elliot Friedman on the Fan Hockey Show today said he had a bunch of people text to him mentioning that name, and he said he's pretty sure Vellucci's going to get an interview. So maybe another name for the short list along with Manny Malhotra there in Mike Vellucci. We'll take a break. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line again. Jason Buchla is going to join us at 1:30. So another open segment, a couple of interesting texts in the inbox that I want to get into that relate to the coaching situation for the Vancouver Canucks. Send your thoughts in as well. More Canucks talk next on Sportsnet 650. To Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And lots of texts continue to come in, and especially about the coaching situation here with the Vancouver Canucks. And one came in from Colin from the Caribou, saying, can you rank all eight of the NHL head coaching vacancies in terms of desirability to an experienced in-demand coach? Where would Vancouver finish on that list? And this is something, Randeep and I got into it a little bit last year. I don't think we did like a final numbered ranking. And obviously there's been some extra openings since then as well. I do find it a fascinating exercise, though, because I don't think there's a clear... You know, sometimes you do get a situation where it's like, hey, this is a really good veteran team. And, you know, they've stumbled into the playoffs a few times. So we're moving on from the coach. But, you know, hey, somebody can come in and do some damage with that team right away. Right. Like I think of, you know, Florida having an opening when Paul Maurice went there, or Vegas when Bruce Cassidy ends up there. Right. Like you could see the path. Hey, this team could be a Stanley Cup contender. I don't know if you're looking at any of the vacancies for next year with that kind of lens, right? Where it's like, hey, I can win in the next 2 years in this team, with this team. I can win a Stanley Cup there. And that makes the ranking process a little more difficult. I do think, the more I think about it, the team I might have at the top, I think it might be the Anaheim Ducks as one of the most desirable coaching vacancy in the NHL right now. What do you say to that, Drance?
I'm a little worried to speak because my mic seems to be picking up every sound I make, but so
you sound all right.
Not blowing out your eardrums.
No, you sound all right.
So a lot of people around the league seem to believe that Joel Quenneville is the most likely person to end up in Anaheim.
All right.
So I don't know that that's viewed like, I mean, it's obviously a vacancy and they'll go through a process, but that's a vacancy with a... someone who's viewed around the league as like a strong prohibitive favorite.
Interesting.
Like should be valued at minus 400.
Okay. I'm not sure I love
that sort of thing.
I'm not sure I love that for Anaheim, but that's fair.
It's complicated.
Yep.
Obviously. I will say, I think what they need, in my opinion anyway, is to loosen the reins on their top young talent and let them figure out what they can and can't do at the NHL level, spread their wings, become like a high octane team,
mm-hmm.
and then you rein it back in and learn how to win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first, perform like, you know, a force of nature group with some star players and then rein it back in. I think that's the process we saw Columbus go through this season. I think that's the process we saw the Montreal Canadiens go through somewhat more successfully this season. And then I think there's going to be another layer, another level to this that they have to go through. Now, I have obviously some qualms with like giving Joel Quenneville my full-throated endorsement, given the Brad Aldrich scandal, his role in it, and what I expect of leaders and people in leadership roles in terms of a duty of care to their players. So that would make it complicated, obviously. And I don't want to minimize that, but I will say, just from a pure hockey perspective, Quenneville's skill set matches what I do think the Ducks need. Like, his teams play, you know, that style of game that I think the Ducks sort of need to move through. So I like the Ducks as a pick here. I think you're right. And I don't know if I properly captioned it too, but I'm passing along like rumors. I'm not reporting Ducks thing.
It's like industry
credible
chatter.
Ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, but credible industry chatter. I mean, we're talking people who would know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's one that we'll watch for here. But yeah, I think that's a good ranking to start.
And I think I think the Ducks, maybe the best way to put it is like they have the fewest obvious negatives or fewest obvious like big concerns on the horizon, I think is the way I would get. And then you think it's like, well, it's Anaheim and there's all that and you've got all this young talent. Like, I think it's just there's so many warts on all of the other teams that Anaheim, by virtue of not really having any of those clear-cut warts, even though there's a lot of uncertainty, rises to the top of my list. So, okay, we'll go Anaheim number one. Is there a standout number two team on the vacancy list for you?
I think it's Philly.
Really?
Yeah. I think pretty clearly. There's a couple things I really like about the Philadelphia Flyers. And one of them is like a pure cynicism, like if I was a coach and thinking in Machiavellian terms about where I could go next, one of the reasons Philly stands out to me is that realistically they weren't that far away from the playoff bar just this year. I know they finished dead last in the East, but it was so compressed. We're talking about a 15-point gap between them and the Montreal Canadiens. And they had the worst goaltending in hockey by a mile. And so I look at that and think, or if I was a coach, I would look at that and think to myself, boy, if we get a goalie, that alone is going to get us right into the mix as a playoff team.
I'm going to win the Jack Adams
and
if we get a goalie.
I'm going to get credit.
Yeah.
and I'm going to get credit for that. And that's going to immediately earn me runway.
Yep.
With an organization that's been rebuilding that gives me multiple years of sort of job security and weight. And this is still a young team. There's some interesting pieces. They're going to have $20 million in cap space this summer. They're going to have a path to keeping some of their powder dry. And, I mean, we'll see where things go and how things move. But, you know, if I make significant progress, make the playoffs, you know, like as an eighth seed, Michkov's trending to be really good. And then, you know, we're a sort of not an original six team, but still like a classic big market team.
Yep.
You know, and we have 15, 18 million in cap space next summer. Maybe it's more. I mean, am I in the mix for McDavid? Am I looking like one of the best sort of rising forces in the league, one of the most appealing destinations for one of those, you know, superstar players considering their options in a new like world where all these top guys are going to get 15 to 18 or more in McDavid's case, million. I mean, that feels like the best bet in terms of how can I enhance my job security, go to a stable situation and have the upside locked in.
All right. I think it's interesting. I can buy that argument for Philly, especially the goaltending one. Yeah, a little bit. But here's the thing. I think after Anaheim, there's like a six-way tie for me. Like, it's like there's just – I think there's so little to choose between for so many of these jobs. And, like, so Philly.
Yeah, see, I think Philly's a clear two.
So Philly, Michkov, great. And I think you're right. Like, I think you can put Philly number two, second, as we might say, and be totally justifiable in it. But then I look at them, like Chicago. Okay, they're a mess, but you get to coach Connor Bedard, and they're extremely motivated. They're extremely motivated to get better and add talent to that roster, right? And so you go down the list then, and like New York, well.
Too much work, and I don't have runway. If that
in Chicago,
like, that team, I don't think I have runway because I don't know how secure management is.
Sure.
If I don't make a significant leap forward in year one with a roster that still looks 31 or 30 mm-hmm. or 31st or 30th, Jamie, you know, I don't know that I get runway. I don't know that I have stability ahead of me or on top of me, as it were, in terms of the reporting structure. If I go to Chicago, like with Philly, I think Briere and Jones have bought themselves a lot of goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's just a lot more security and a lot more potential in year one to show my value and then have some runway thereafter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. So who's
like, I put Chicago behind other teams.
Yeah, that's fair. Like again, cause I can make the case totally for a bunch of different teams. Who comes in third for you?
I think at the end of the day, you have to go and give it to the Rangers.
Right.
Now, you know how I think about the Rangers. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that there's significant dark clouds gathering on the horizon for that team. Massive risk profile. But I'm going to get paid the most there. I'm going to live in Manhattan. I'm going to work at Madison Square Garden.
You got a goalie.
Like, it's just the cool. I got a goalie. I got a 1D. I've got a ton of skill up front. Mm-hmm. I've got, you know, a forward in Alexis Lafreniere who's underachieved, but can I get Byfield second half out of him?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I get Byfield second half out of him, even if we're like a fringe playoff team, I feel like people will give me some grace. And that's a bet I'd like to make because he's an elite player.
I don't think you're getting,
in my opinion,
I don't think you're getting grace for a fringe playoff performance with the Rangers next year.
Well, that's the problem because I think the expectations don't meet or don't match the reality of that team. But Manhattan, baby, coolest job. The coolest job factor has to be factored in.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, some of the other ones. Boston, Seattle, Pittsburgh, Chicago. Anything you like from them?
Yeah, so I would put – I think I'd put Pittsburgh next. I think there's a long road to run before you're winning anything,
mm-hmm.
but I think you probably get some decent road. I think, like, let's empathize with Talkett here as an example. We know how much Crosby means to Talkett. And it's cool to show up at your job every day and know that you have like a very specific mission that you believe in. And now winning is obviously the best mission that you can have. But imagine being the guy who's tasked with getting Sidney Crosby another chance at this thing.
Yeah.
Like, don't you just feel like that would carry weight? Well, it'd be like a solemn, you know, motivation that comes from that.
You get to coach Sidney Crosby. That's an incredible headline item right there. Like
an incredible lore.
Even if the ownership situation or whatever was fraught, it's like, well, I still get to coach Sidney Crosby. Like that is a massive, massive opportunity for any NHL head coach. Okay, let's go lightning round through the rest of these because there's some interesting audio from Connor Garland, actually, that just dropped that I want to play momentarily here. So what do we have? We have Anaheim, Philly, New York, Pittsburgh. Whip through your final four here. That's the top half. Whip through your bottom half here for us.
I would put Seattle and Chicago last.
Okay.
And then I will put...
So Vancouver with Boston in like the 5-6 hole?
I think I might put Vancouver with Chicago and Seattle.
Yeah.
And then I would put sorry, Boston ahead of those three teams, because at least I'm pretty confident that, you know, Sweeney and Neely have some license to run a multi-year rebuild. And look, you're the Boston Bruins at the end of the day. You're going to get like three magic college free agents, all of whom are middle six guys the moment they step on the ice. You still have Pasternak, McAvoy, and Swayman. You know, it's obviously grim and it's going to take some time, but you're not bereft of anything crucial. Let's hear the Garland.
The only thing I quibble with there is the potential runway for the front office, but I think Pasternak, Swayman, McAvoy is enough to counterbalance that a little bit and make it at least somewhat attractive.
Even if Sweeney ends up on the hot seat, Neely won't, though.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, Connor Garland was just on NHL Network today with Mike Rupp and Brian Boyle, and first member of the Canucks organization other than Jim Rutherford that we've heard opine and weigh in on the departure of Rick Tocchet. Of course, we know about the relationship between Connor Garland and Rick Tocchet dating back to their days in Arizona. I haven't heard this yet, so this is very exciting for all of us. We're hearing it together. Here is Connor Garland.
So just want to ask you what it was like having Tocchet as a coach, what this kind of means for you guys moving forward.
Yeah, well, I'm in a unique situation. I had Rick as a rookie in Arizona, and then had missed him for a year. And then he came back and joined me in Vancouver again at a different stage in my life and career. And I was very fortunate to have him. And I was a young player. I really didn't understand the details of the game and what it took to win. And, I was more just relying on scoring and producing points. And he taught me the other side of the game and really, filled out the rest of my game. And I'll be forever grateful for that. And as I've gotten older and had a family and a kid, he's, it's weird to say he's a coach. I kind of look at him as like another father figure and, kind of a friend to me. When stuff happened in my personal life, he's one of the people you can lean on. And any team that gets him is going to be very lucky. A lot of those guys, whether he wins 10 more Jack Adams or doesn't win another game, those guys will play, go through a wall for him. He's that type of coach, and, any team will be lucky to have him.
That is Canucks forward Connor Garland weighing in again on the NHL Network with Mike Rupp and Brian Boyle asking the questions on the departure of Rick Tocchet. And again, we knew that there was a strong relationship there, and he alludes to that, the process they've gone through together dating back to his rookie season, calls him a father figure, someone he leaned on in his personal life, not just in hockey, talked about the development he saw in his game under Rick Tocchet. And then you hear at the end there, any team will be lucky to have him, and guys will go through a wall for him. So again, just no one in the Canucks organization is ducking the magnitude of what losing Rick Tocchet means, right? The people in the game who are dealing with Rick Tocchet are telling you pretty clearly, we really liked this guy. We thought he was a great fit, and it's going to be a big hole to fill now that he's gone.
Yeah. I mean, Garland sounds legitimately wistful.
Yeah.
Like that's a player who's like not even upset, just sad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've lost this guy on a day-to-day basis, and he's the best. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. And he was huge. I mean, like, that specifically helped me in all these really important ways.
Yeah, personally and as a player.
Yeah.
And, man, the amount that Garland behind the scenes, I think, has grown from what I hear secondhand anyway, like, as a leader and a positive presence and a driver of winning – I mean, I think it's been significant during his time in Vancouver, and I think there's no question that Tocchet's had a big role in that. He was also one of the most impactful defensive players in the league this year. I mean, the idea that he's saying, my play without the puck was a mess, and now, there's a whole ton of information data that suggests that Garland's like one of the 15 most impactful defensive players. Now, that doesn't mean like stationary in zone defense, but Canucks just don't generate or don't give away chances or looks when he's on the ice at an elite clip. So that growth has been massive.
Mm-hmm.
I've known for a long time how Garland feels about Tocchet. Even the "he's the best" quote is just like straight up how Garland describes him. Off the cuff, doesn't think about it, just like, yeah, he's the best.
Yeah.
And, I think this also speaks to like one theme that I think we've had as media or pundits talking about this team over the years, is often will be higher on a coach than the fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people will make jokes about how it's like, because they're nice to them and on and on. And it's like, no, we see how these guys carry themselves day to day. And part of it's dealing with us, but that's a small part of it. Part of it's what you hear. Part of it's what players say. And, you know, sometimes you disregard it because truly, despite some of these endorsements of talk, the truth is that the shortest pamphlet in the NHL is players that like their coach. And the second shortest, by the way, is coaches that like their team.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you know, I think there's a real sentiment among a bulk of Canucks players, but obviously not every Canucks player, that, you know, they've lost a really good guy and a really good hockey mind and just a guy who's fun to be around and play for.
It is interesting too, because we got this text earlier from Nate who said, do you think the odds of Garland as trade bait goes up exponentially with Tocchet gone? And I look, I don't know. I mean, it's not as if Tocchet was the only person in the organization who liked Connor Garland, but it's a good reminder that we do have to kind of completely reframe how we look at the Canucks roster. We're so used to looking at them as, hey, Rick Tocchet has a very strong identity and very clear demands of what he wants from players. Do all of these players check those boxes? How does Rick Tocchet feel about them? And that's guided a lot of what we think about who could be on the move, who do they really value. That's kind of all out the window now. And I think that clip was a great reminder as well from Connor Garland's perspective. He's eligible for an extension on July 1st. How does it change his view on stick? Like, it's not as major of a question, obviously, as Quinn Hughes or Thatcher Demko or anything, but I think it's a good reminder that it does really change our calculus when we're trying to figure out who could be a potential trade chip, who's going to commit here long term, who's part of the leadership group, all of those things. And the Garland Tocchet relationship really symbolizes a lot of what we knew about this roster and the roles and all of that is going to be new. It's going to be brand new now with a new head coach coming in.
Yeah, and it extends beyond the obvious guys too. Like,
yeah,
there's a role that a head coach like Tocchet plays in recruitment and conversations with players who are, say, pending UFAs. There are players on this Canucks team that will have left money on the table in order to play for Rick Tocchet. And they're still signed here. And I'm, you know, among the many things that make Tocchet's decision remarkable, and that, like, this isn't me doing my empathy goggles, feeling my way through it. Like, I'm telling you that this is something that I know the head coach wrestled with, was, you know, the sort of loyalty that those players showed him and the regret that he feels having to leave as a result, right? Same goes for, you know, how much some of the support staffers meant to him and the relationships within a team, you know, because those are deep and those matter to this head coach. And, you know, again, that's all part of the he's the best thing.
Yeah.
You know, I know that made this even more arduous and complicated for Tocchet in sort of navigating this over the course of the past week.
So that's the latest from Connor Garland saying that any team is going to be lucky to have Rick Tocchet. Guys will go through a wall for him. I would go through a wall for our next guest, Jason Bukla, who joins us every week. He's down in Dallas for the U18s, and we'll talk to Books next about Tocchet's departure, what he's seen at the U18s, Stanley Cup playoffs, anything we want to get into with Books next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, we are live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Now joining us, as he does every Wednesday, from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, he's our pal, Jason Bukla. Books, what's going on?
Not too much, fellas. Just down here in Dallas at the Under 18 World Championships. So I have to forewarn you in case I cut out here. The thunderstorms that have rolled through this area today have been sensational for storm guys who like to chase storms. It's been quite a sight.
All right. Well, we'll keep that in mind in case you do cut out. And hopefully we'll have a chance to get some thoughts from the U18s. But, of course, the big news here yesterday, Rick Tocchet, no longer head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. What are your thoughts on that news and what this means for the Canucks going forward?
I'm really disappointed, to be perfectly honest with you. I think I've made it pretty clear over the last couple of years that I'm a big fan of how that coaching staff conducted itself and the structure and the poise behind the bench. I just felt like it felt really good to me. It felt like a really good fit. It felt like the communication was in place and things went off the rails this year, but it was nothing to do with the coaching staff. And if anything, I think to a man, they did, you know, potentially even better job than they did the year before when he won the coach of the year, you know, the Jack Adams, to try and keep that ship on its, you know, without sinking this year. So, yeah, it's disappointing. Got to turn over a new leaf here and curious to see what the next move is. But I think it's, again, going to have to be a stern coach, but a real good communicator for the new breed of player.
Yeah, and I mean, there's going to be a lot of things that the next coach is tasked with. Obviously, the Quinn Hughes factor is one element of it, but probably the number one item on the new coach's to-do list is going to be getting through to Elias Pettersson, getting the most out of Elias Pettersson. As you said, stern, but a good communicator in general. When you think of specifically what kind of coach you would want, given everything that's happened over the last 15 months with Elias Pettersson, like, what would you be looking for in a coach to come in and hopefully establish a positive working relationship with that player?
Accountability right away. I think when you're fresh out of the box like that, the communication between the potential star player up front, that is, with the Canucks and the new head coach, the communication and the accountability has got to be right at the front of the line for me, and there has to be an understanding of what the expectation is and that I'm going to hold you accountable to a standard. And it can't just be the standard of what you can do when your things are going really well offensively. It's got to be the standard of how we need you to play the game, all 200 feet and the detail in all three zones, and those nights that you're not scoring, how we need you to be best prepared to kind of, you know, toe the rope to in the best interest of the entire group. So I think that's the first thing. And then beyond that, honestly, for the good of the group as well, I think that, you know, the standard has to be somewhat the same as what we're talking, it's leaving behind. And that is that, you know, again, the accountability as a group, when the culture was building in a positive direction here, the results were there. And when things internally, these guys are pros and they're grown men, they got to learn how to, A, get along with each other on a daily basis. They don't have to love each other off the ice. They really don't care. But you got to go to work. You got to get the job done and hold each other more accountable in the dressing room. Not so sure who the alpha dog is to make that happen. Quinn Hughes leads by example. We'll see what the next layer provides here, and that'll be part and parcel with what the coach is looking for.
Paul Maurice obviously sort of stepped back in Winnipeg after a lengthy tenure with that team. But for the most part, we don't see this very often, Books. Do you see this as a No. canary in the coal mine in terms of Vancouver's overall process and organizational health?
I want to say no, but I can't, Strancer. Like, I just can't.
That was a long sigh,
no.
Bud.
I feel like, yeah, that's a, I feel like there's just been so much to unpack, and I only know what I know. So I try and stay in my lane, right? I try and stay in my lane by evaluating the talent and providing my feedback on what I believe are the expectation, my expectation of the group. I feel like the coach definitely put forth an outstanding effort to get the most out of this group. When he leaves, it just leaves behind a lot of question marks. Like, I've heard the practice facility thrown around, but then I've also heard that, you know, you guys know better than me, but they only had to practice at UBC 8 to 10 times. But today's athlete, today's NHL franchise, I can tell you for certain, and you don't have to look any further than what they're doing in Florida with their new facility up at the top of Los Olas Boulevard, which is closer to where the guys live. Mm-hmm. It's state of the art. And that is a bigger, that's a big deal. That's a commitment that has to be made. It should have been made a long time ago. I'm not saying that that's a huge part in the decision of the coach. I'm just saying that it's just another thing that you have to deal with. But behind closed doors, I don't know how all the negotiations go. It sounds like a 5-year deal on the tip. When a coach is offered 5 years of security at the age of 61, even though he's done a fantastic job and still walks away from it, that leaves me thinking that there's a lot more going on, just not just with him and wanting to move back east, but there's got to be some other stuff there, and that's for somebody else to find out, Elliot Friedman, for example. But for me, to answer, it leaves me with a lot of questions.
With where the Canucks are at and what they need to be thinking about is the most important question that they have to ask themselves in evaluating possible candidates for the next head coach who can get through to Elias Pettersson.
I think it's part of it. I don't think it's all of it, though. I don't think that, like, let me strip it down for you guys a little bit. My confidence level in the player, even before the new coach comes in, and it will be nice to get an outside perspective, an outside opinion, and he'll be provided some information. He'll want to ask some questions in the interview process, because it can't just all fall on his lap. You can't just give him a problem without knowing how the problem was created in the first place. Give me more information so that I can best figure out how to solve the problem. My issue right now is my trust level as an outsider is at an all-time low with the player. So I'm not so sure that as a team, as a management group, that I'm even down the road yet to plop that on my new head coach. I think I'm still in the process of evaluating whether this player is the proper fit for us, period, going forward. What's the value of the asset outside of the organization? And, of course, it's lower than it ever has been. But having said that, whatever that looks like, if you could get off the money, if you come to that conclusion, that might not be something that the new coach has to deal with at all. So I'm sitting on the fence with that, because I don't think it's really fair to throw that at him without him having all the information on his lap. And for me personally, I still got to shop that asset, guys. I still need to get all the information for what's the good of the group here.
Yeah, I find it fascinating how the coaching vacancy interacts with the question of what's going to happen with the roster here, because obviously this is far from a settled roster, especially up front. You know, until the news of Rick Tocchet leaving, we all thought job number one was going to be improving the center depth and finding difference-making players in your top six. That's still job number one, but, you know, Tocchet did such a good job of building a team with a very clear identity. Sometimes that frustrated fans here, right? That it was too defensive, that it was low event hockey. But I think we knew what they were trying to do. We knew what a Rick Tocchet player was. We'll see what that looks like under the new coach. But how much does the new coach and their ideas and their philosophies, how much will that or should that affect how the Canucks try to remake this roster, right? Like, how much does that play into the specific guys you're targeting to bring in and try to improve your team?
Yeah, it's a tough one, because the shelf life of coaches nowadays is not very long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether you sign a coach to a 2-year or 3-year deal, it's going to be a minimum 3-year deal. If I'm coming in, given the state of the where it's at right now, and depending where that coach is coming from, the pedigree as well, it's going to be 3 at least, but it might get up to as far as 4. I don't see it getting to 5, but who knows, depending again on the pedigree of the coach. It's one of those timeline issues, because now we're getting towards combine, we're getting towards draft, and yes, you have to hire a coach, but at the same time, free agency is going to sneak right up on you at that time as well. Like, the organization, upper management, Patrick Alvin, obviously Jimmy Rutherford, and then right through the pro staff, and then obviously the amateurs building the depth, they have a plan of how they want to fit the puzzle pieces together monetarily and with the type of player that they want to have in the Vancouver Canucks organization. So my answer in a long way is here that the coach is probably going to have to adjust to whatever he's given and have to take a look at the current lay of the land and understand the future landscape for how the management likes to see the team play and get built. It's not going to be until next year, if he has success, that he has more say in what they want to do in terms of going to buy something on the open market or maybe trade for something at the trade deadline. I see it as a very it's a big ask at this point with the timeline the way that it is for him to have too much say in that process.
And, of course, one of the other big questions here is Quinn Hughes. We don't know if he's been able to return Jim Rutherford's call yet or not, or if he's still on the golf course. But, of course, we're all wondering what Quinn Hughes is going to think about this, if this plays a factor into his future decision about whether or not to re-sign with the Canucks. And, you know, I've heard a lot from fans along the lines of, well, you need an established name that's going to carry weight with Quinn Hughes right away. Jim Rutherford did say, though, yesterday that, hey, there's a lot of really successful coaches in the NHL right now and on their first go who were AHL coaches before they stepped up. What do you need in a coach to make sure that they can come into that room and whether they're experienced or not, kind of immediately demand and earn respect from a player like Quinn Hughes?
I think honestly, Quinn Hughes, I think we might be overplaying that just a little bit. I think Quinn Hughes is the ultimate pro. I really do. And this year should probably tell us more than we ever wanted to know about this player. Honestly, he tried to will that team into playoffs. He played through injury. He's cerebral, right? He's not the loudest guy. He's not the alpha dog, but he leads by example, and clearly he wants to win, and I get that. But I don't think that if you went outside the box with, say, a David Carl from the University of Denver, for example, who's just won everything in USA Hockey and national championships at the college level, I don't think that that would bother him in the least. As a matter of fact, I think he'd be welcoming something like that, instead of a retread, and I hate to use that as a term, but that's kind of, you know, instead of just regurgitating it's nice to get a younger guy in there sometimes, new ideas, new energy, but still buttoned up and structured. And I think that those are the types of candidates that they'll exhaustively go through. And maybe they'll look to Europe too. I think you got to start to look into Europe. And, you know, there's some guys over there that are doing a hell of a job. I don't think that Quinn Hughes is going to be really upset one way or the other. I think that he'll prepare around whatever is given. I think he'd be more worried about the group, like the group itself, more than the coach.
Books, a question from the inbox. Mike in Maple Ridge wants to know how Cam Schmidt and Ryan Lynn, a couple of Vancouver Giants, are looking down in Texas.
So, Schmitty, we all know what he does. He's an undersized shooter. He's tracking up and down the ice. He's doing what he does to the best of his ability. I don't want to sugarcoat it because it is that time of the year. I'm expecting more out of him today. I'm actually, as soon as I get off this call, going in to watch them play their quarterfinal game against Czechia, and curious to see how he plays today and into the semis. But when he's not producing offense and ripping the puck, he needs to be more engaged in all three zones. And I think he knows that too, and that's something that he'll be pressed about at the combine. Still a top two round pick, so don't underestimate it, but just okay. The Lynn kid on the back end, this kid's a special player, transitional defenseman. He's been good, not great, but he's got another year ahead of him as an underage. And boy, oh boy, I've watched him play live and, here and then in Vancouver as well. I love the upside of this kid. So two real good prospects coming out of the Vancouver Giants organization for sure.
If there was an under-the-radar coaching candidate, not you're not trying to pick the right answer, but you, in your heart of hearts, you know, well down those coaching candidates lists, when you see their name, you're like, man, that's going to be a sharp, sharp hire for somebody. Is there a name that stands out to you?
I think he's right in your back door. I really do. I think Manny Malhotra has earned the stripes. He's obviously done very good work with the in Abbotsford. Before that, in Toronto, he really did a nice job just staying in his lane, guys, with the Leafs. He was never, you know, he had a job to do, and he did it to the best of his ability. Clearly, there was some synergy there. It won't rock anybody's world that he's the biggest name, but what a guy that played. He's a lead by example guy too, right? Fought through that eye injury. He always played hard, great in the faceoff dot, really responsible defensively. He's done a hell of a job. I think he's a new breed type of communicator too. So I think he's right there in your backyard in Abbotsford as a promotable candidate. That would be my take on that. And I already spit out the Carl name out of Denver. I mean, I've watched this guy coach hockey now for the last 4 or 5 years at the highest level of college, and then obviously the World Juniors, and he does not get rattled in the least. So, you know, those are guys that could be like the Spencer Carberry type of hires, and I think that they would be positive.
I'll throw another name at you just because it came in up in the inbox earlier as well. Mitch Love, who's on the bench with the Washington Capitals, coached in the AHL with Calgary for a couple of years, obviously WHL. I know he got some interviews for head coaching jobs before this stop in Washington. What do you think about him?
I think we're right in the same target as Manny Malhotra. I mean, Mitch Love did a hell of a job right there with the Wranglers, and you know, he had a great junior career, and he's definitely part of the reason the Washington Capitals, that bench team in Washington, have done a hell of a job, and he's definitely part of that. So that's another great name to keep an eye on as well. I like this. Like, as soon as we spit out these names, guys, I don't know how it feels to you, but I get excited a little bit, right? Like, it makes me feel good. I know that sounds kind of juvenile, if you will, but you know, it's easy to throw out the Laviolettes and these other guys, but these ones, they make me feel good. So fingers crossed that those are the types of people that they go to interview.
Yeah, well, they said, you know, Malhotra is going to be on the short list. And again, Rutherford certainly left the door open to hiring somebody that didn't have a ton of NHL head coaching experience. And I think your point about Quinn Hughes is bang on, right? Like, don't think about, oh, we got to hire a name that's going to blow him away right out of the off the jump. Think about someone who's going to do a really good job, right? Because that's going to be ultimately the thing that impresses Quinn Hughes the most here. Before we let you go, we asked about the Giants. Who else is catching your eye at the U18 so far?
Oh, boys, I love this Braden Coots kid that plays for the Seattle Thunderbirds. He is a pain in the rear end. He's having a fantastic tournament here. So I've got him later on in my first round. Ben Kindle made the trip over from the Calgary Hitmen, but there's some names that are going to be right in the wheelhouse for the Canucks. Get excited, Canucks fans, believe it or not, because Sasha Boumediene from Team Sweden is having a great tournament on the back end, but we'll have a discussion about that on another day because you guys are going through the Tom Wallander situation right now.
Uh-huh.
As a right shot D. But Coots, Kindle, and the Brady Martin kid from Sault Ste. Marie. So those are names that they play the game the right way, fellas, and you don't have to wind them up to go. That's a big deal to me, and I think you guys would love to have them.
Books, the only thing I'm going to say is I think Canucks fans are going to hold off on getting excited about the first-round prospects until Patrick Alvin has walked up to the podium and made the selection. Until then, they're going to be anticipating that pick's getting traded away.
Well, listen, boys, you know how I am. Asset management. So whatever's going to make you better in the short term, I'm all for it.
Absolutely.
As long as you manage the assets.
We'll get excited once the pick has been made. Books, great stuff as always, man. We'll chat next week.
Amazing, boys. Thanks for having me on. Have a good day.
That is Jason Buchla from Sportsnet, former director of amateur scouting. He's covering the U18 World Championships in Dallas right now, weighing in on some people who've caught his eyes and what the Canucks should do, what they need to prioritize going forward. Big vote of confidence in Manny Malhotra from Jason Buchla, right? And I like the way he put it, kind of that new age communicator style of coach. And I do see some similarities. You know, I even think of like Rick Tocchet, Travis Green, examples we're familiar with here of very detail oriented, you know, place a real premium on preparation and organization and all of those things. And those are really important qualities. And we know this management group values those qualities a lot as well. That was one of the big reasons for moving on from Boudreau to Rick Tocchet. So the Malhotra thing, we talked about it earlier, probably not the odds on favor, or maybe not just yet, certainly relative to the field, but certainly a strong candidate. What do you think about the Mitch Love suggestion that I threw out at Buchla?
I mean, I like it. From Quinnell, BC.
Yeah.
Interesting experience. Has been an American League head coach, I don't like hiring assistants.
Yeah, he feels like he's like Malhotra in 2 years or something. You know what I mean? Where it's like he's just a little bit farther down the track than Malhotra is at this current standpoint.
Yeah, look, I think that would be a really good hire. Again, successful, you know, in a variety of different roles. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the profile you're looking for. Successful American League head coach, to me, is often better than getting one of the top names. You know, like, I think that's the profile. That's the profile you're looking for. Just like, you know, in football, you want to get the offensive coordinator who killed it for a team that doesn't have an elite quarterback.
Have I told you, by the way, my...
if they have the...
Hold on. Okay. I have a new theory on NHL, on NFL coaches. You want an offensive guy who looks and acts like a defensive guy, or vice versa. So, like, Dan Campbell is an offensive guy. He's a tight end with defensive coach vibes, right? Jim Harbaugh.
What about McVay?
Sean McVay, he's pretty stacked. Like, he's not like a Kyle Shanahan offensive guy. You know what I mean? Like, McVay, if you saw him,
I think he is.
McVay's a bit of a fly in the ointment, but like Jim Harbaugh in Baltimore.
The most successful coaching hire of the last 10 years is the fly in the
ointment. Jim Harbaugh in Baltimore, right? Like, defensive guy, but, you know, kind of mild-mannered, buttoned up. Like, you just listen to him talk, you'd be like, oh, that's probably an offensive coordinator. That's how you thread the needle. You don't want the offensive guy who looks like an offensive guy. You want the offensive guy who acts like a defensive guy. What do you
think? I think you want just the best offensive coordinator who had the most success with a non-elite quarterback. That's it.
That's also
good.
Look
at the quarterback. What you want to avoid is the Adam Gates factor. That's my take.
Yes.
I'm gonna work
on this theory a little bit more. I think there's something here. I think there's something here.
Figure out how to accommodate McVay. Like, yeah. Because also you're like, you know, you don't want Shanahan. Like, you definitely want Shanahan. That's been a home run.
I know it has. Anyways, it's mostly
two deep runs.
It's mostly a Dan Campbell take, to be perfectly honest. Like, yeah, to me, yeah. that's what makes Dan Campbell great, is he's a defensive vibes guy, but it's actually an offensive guy.
Yeah, and you know, obviously it's different because in the NFL, the problem with the CEO Dan Campbell style coach is that they lose their play callers because everyone wants the offensive head coach.
Yeah.
So it's not a perfect analogy. There's a lot less poaching of assistants in the NHL. But I do think the profile match is, if you're an elite American League head coach, I think the last 10 years of hockey history have shown that that's the profile of bet that teams should be looking to swing hard on.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll see. And again, reading between the lines a little bit on Jim Rutherford, it certainly seems like that's something they'll be interested in doing and trying to find the next version of somebody who fits that profile. That's the show for today. We will be back tomorrow. We'll see. I mean, we've barely talked Stanley Cup playoffs over the last couple of days because there's been so much news, but a couple of elimination games on the schedule today in Washington and Tampa. The Blues and the Jets also on the schedule. So lots of good hockey to watch tonight. We will be back tomorrow for the latest twists and turns with the Canucks and to cover the Stanley Cup playoffs as well here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.